The topic we're going to discuss tonight, if it has begun, is the God delusion. And I'm really happy to have been given this topic because it's certainly a topic here talked about a lot here in the UK. Now, let me just give you a sense of where I'm going to be going with this talk. First of all, let me talk about Richard Dawkins himself. Dawkins is considered by many to be the preeminent evolutionist of our day, and he's a popularizer of science. In fact, he is one of the most successful popularizers of science, and he's really one of the best authors of popular science today. He'd be along the lines of, say, a Carl Sagan or a Isaac Asimov. Dawkins has written some of the best books on evolution, Rivers Out of Eden, The Blind Watchmaker, The Selfish Gene, 1976, Unweaving the Rainbow. And in fact, over the years, I've recommended people read Dawkins' books. Obviously, I don't agree with his conclusions, but I really believe it's important for us to read books by people that we don't agree with. Anyway, Dawkins has gotten a reputation of an excellent scientist, both as a researcher and as one who can communicate the basic teachings of science to regular people. However, unfortunately, in putting out the book, The God Delusion, Dawkins has departed ways from his rather good writing. In fact, the God Delusion is such poorly argued diatribe against religion that I really don't even recommend people to read the book. Now, by the way, if you're looking at the PowerPoint here, you can see a picture of me. I was actually at Oxford about 3 days ago, and that's me pointing at the laboratory that Dawkins uses. I thought that was a nice little curiosity there. Now, let me talk about the key points of the God delusion. What I want to do is I want to reflect and discuss the nature of the book, but the book is so poorly argued, so poorly written, and is so biased that I don't really want to spend the whole time talking about it because it'll be a rather depressing affair. And what we're going to see is that even some of Dawkins' best friends have admitted that the God delusion is a rather bad example of argument. In fact, right now I'm setting up a debate between Michael Shermer, one of the leading atheists in the world, and my friend Dr. Doug Jacoby. And Michael Shermer shared with me, when he read my review of The God Delusion, he shared with me that, no, really, honestly, Dawkins is really a rather nice guy and one of the most caring and open-hearted people he knew. And my response was, well, how do you explain the fact that he's so incredibly mean and mean-spirited towards religion? That's kind of interesting. Anyway, let me explain to you the key points of the book, The God Delusion. First of all, there exists a known mechanism by which organic evolution creates greater complexity through genetic mutation, gene crossing, and natural selection. In other words, the beginning of his argument is that it is a given, a well-established scientific fact, that at least in one particular case, in other words, in organic life, that there exists random natural processes which allow for greater and greater complexity over time. And I'm willing to concede that point. I'm not so willing to concede that, for example, human beings evolved from bacteria by a completely undesigned and unregulated or uncontrolled series of events. However, I definitely am willing to concede that that the natural system that we know as evolution, which, by the way, I believe is one of the most wonderful creations of God, does indeed have the ability to create order or to create greater complexity. Now, our intelligent design friends may not agree with that, but the bottom line is experiments again and again have shown that the theory of evolution is a very good predictor of what's observed in nature. Now, the second point that Dawkins makes is, therefore, it's settled that nature can spontaneously create complexity as a general rule. There's a lot of problem here. What he's doing is he's committing the classic pseudoscience error of arguing by analogy. In other words, what he's saying is, given that we know that evolution itself can create more complex systems by a random spontaneous process, then he leaps to the conclusion that this is something which nature can do in any setting. In fact, it's the most natural thing that nature does. For example, he argues that the universe itself Given that the universe is incredibly well suited, and as we'll talk about later in this talk, given the fact that the laws of nature are incredibly well suited to allow advanced life forms to exist, such as human beings, he argues that there exists some sort of natural selection, some sort of gene crossing, genetic mutation equivalent process, which led to such a wonderfully and well-designed universe. In other words, he's proposing, arguing by analogy, that the universe itself can generate complexity in its own design, allowing life to exist. The problem with that is he gives absolutely no evidence to support this idea. And it's pseudoscience. Anyway, the next point that Dawkins makes in his book is basically then there is an analogous complexity creator which can explain why the fine-tuned universe we live in was created. And by the way, Dawkins accepts as a given this multiverse idea. It's the idea that, and it's sheer speculation I would say this, but it's the idea that there exists an infinite number of universes and we just happen to live in that universe which has the properties which are uniquely and amazingly well-tuned to allow advanced life forms to exist. And of course, it's not a good sign for his science that Dawkins accepts as essentially given that the multiverse, which has absolutely no evidence, in fact is a highly speculative model, that he accepts that as part of the basis for his argument. Anyway, the next point that Dawkins makes, this being proved, in other words, that the universe can spontaneously generate complexity, and in fact can even create informational systems at random, then there's no need to invoke the anthropic principle. Now, the anthropic principle is simply this. The anthropic principle is the only explanation yet given to explain the nature of the laws of nature themselves. Now, science in general is not really a good source of answering questions such as why. For example, science can answer questions about when, where, how many, which. But the one question, which is really the only question in general that humans really in their bottom root want to answer is, why? Why do things happen the way that they do? So the anthropic principle, like I said, is the only successful answer that I've ever seen to explain why the laws of nature are as they are. The anthropic principle simply states that the laws of nature are the way they are because they were designed by some sort of designer so that advanced life forms such as human beings can exist. And in fact, you can explain, for example, why gravity's force is as strong as it is, why water has the properties it has, etc., 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 that I'll be talking about later. However, basically, what Dawkins wants to do is he wants to prove that the anthropic principle has no validity simply because he assumes it's been proven that nature itself can spontaneously create these ordered systems that allow life to exist. Again, the problem with this is he provides absolutely no evidence for this broad brush conclusion. His only evidence is that evolution itself can create complexity. Now, the next conclusion in the book is, therefore, it's proven that there's no God. In fact, there is no supernatural presence in the universe at all. All of reality can be explained by random action of material forces. That's quite a big conclusion, given the rather small evidence train he has to make his conclusion. Now, Dawkins goes on, and you have to understand that the purpose of the God delusion is not scientific per se. The purpose of the God delusion is to create the picture that not only that religion is not necessary, but that is in fact the most pernicious evil force in human culture. So the next point in the book is something like this. It being proven that there's no designer, no supernatural presence, then belief in God, in the soul, in spirituality, in moral absolute is sheer delusion. In other words, those who hold on tenaciously to the idea of God are psychologically ill. They're deluded. They are insane. He has the boldness to say that. That next point is the tendency common among all humans towards religious belief is the result of the formation of a meme. Now here's where Dawkins truly becomes pseudoscientific. In fact, I'm going to argue later on in this talk that that many of the marks of pseudoscience are found scattered throughout the entire work. So Dawkins proposes to explain why it is that so many people believe in God by two points. First of all, he says that religion is analogous to a virus. In other words, religion spreads from person to person, from culture to culture, by a virus. There's a thing called a religion virus. What he fails to do is show any evidence that a religion virus exists. In fact, he completely ignores all the work of sociologists and psychologists of religion, and he proposes this completely pseudoscientific idea. And it's pseudoscientific for several reasons, but one of the reasons is that there's literally not a single piece of evidence to support this idea that there's such a thing as a religion virus. Then he has another pseudoscientific concept, which is the meme. Again, the meme is a sheer invention of Dawkins himself. He proposed the word and the idea in 1976. And this a meme is sort of like a gene-like unit of human understanding that evolves as a cultural idea. In other words, that a meme, which is an entity, of course, which doesn't exist, in fact, there's no evidence that it exists, that this proposed entity has the ability to reproduce itself in a method basically exactly analogous to how genes pass around. Now, the difference is we know that genes are passed from parent to offspring. We can observe a gene. We can make predictions about a gene. We can observe a gene on a molecular level. We can observe the cause and effect of genetic traits. But this meme idea has absolutely no foundation in physical reality, in experiment. It's a sheer creation of the mind of Dawkins. So why does he create this idea? Because what he wants to show is that religion has no basis in reality at all. In fact, his point is that religion is a distortion of reality. That religion was created by an accidental process in the course of human evolution. In fact, he believes it's the most destructive thing ever produced by the evolution of the human brain. Now, the next couple of points here are, first of all, not only is all religious thought a delusion, it is, in fact, the most dangerous, pernicious, destructive force in human culture. It is the natural enemy of the only true source of knowledge, which is the scientific method. You have to understand that Dawkins is a thoroughgoing materialist. In other words, he believes the only reality is that which can be discovered through the work of science. In other words, the physical forces, the material entities, are the only things that are real. Justice is not real, love is not real, human consciousness is not real, good and evil are not real, those things are not real. Next, he says, those who refuse to give up religious belief are at least indirectly responsible for all the evil in the world. He makes the outrageous point that those who do not repudiate all forms of religion are part and parcel with Taliban, the Al-Qaeda, and that even if we don't agree with those people, we're just one slippery slope step away from essentially being Al-Qaeda. Because like he says, like he proposes anyway, that all suffering, all hatred are the result of religion. And he proposes, therefore, that religion should be removed from the world. In fact, the only way for the human race to advance is to eliminate this outmoded, infantile idea known as religion and belief in God. Oh, one more thing. He also takes as a given that the existence of God is a scientific hypothesis to be decided by empirical scientific experiment. In other words, he proposes that the only person in human culture who has the right to decide on the existence of God is the scientist. In fact, if God cannot be proven through empirical experiment, by definition, he doesn't exist. The problem with this is anybody who has an understanding of the concept of God, at least the most common human concept of God, is that God, by definition, is not demonstrable by experiment. In other words, Dawkins sets up a circular argument which says God doesn't exist because God doesn't exist. Now, what I want to do is I want to go into a bit more detail describing the problems with Dawkins' method of argumentation. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because I really like it to get to responding to some of the big arguments of Dawkins. So I really don't want to spend too much time showing to you why this book is so poorly done, because I really think we're going to get more out of responding to the basic arguments, arguments that not just Dawkins, but even some other people would make. So first of all, the book is extremely biased, and it is absolutely loaded with emotional arguments. These are the kind of things that scientists have been trained not to do. And that's one of the reason that even Dawkins' friends have really turned away from him on this point, because the bottom line is, this book is a very, very, very poor example of scientific argument. In fact, it is non-scientific. It is not a scientific argument at all. Now, let me give you some example of the kinds of statements that you find in The God Delusion. For example, the first line in the book, Dawkins mentioned, he says this, "As a child, my wife hated her school and wished she could leave." Basically, this kind of gives you a hint as to where he's headed, because this book is about hatred. This book is about Dawkins' hatred of religion and religious belief, and even of those who support religious belief. On page one, he mentions the BBC documentary about religion. The title of the documentary is The Root of All Evil. Dawkins says he doesn't believe that religion is the root of all evil, but then he proceeds throughout the book to undermine that idea. In fact, he immediately lists the evil perpetrated by religion, and basically what he says is, it may not be the root of all evil, but it's just the root of all the evil he can think of. Here's a quote from the book. "When one person suffers from a delusion, it's called insanity. When many people suffer from delusion, it's called religion." Now that's an extremely argumentative and angry and emotional statement that doesn't do anything to advance dialogue over the nature of religion, whether it's good or evil. He calls religion a vice. A quote from the book, page 31, "The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction." Page 36, he calls the belief in God silly. Now there's a good way to deal with your with the person you're arguing with. He calls the Christian God a psychotic delinquent on page 38, a monster on page 46. He calls believers weird on page 53. He's amused by the things religionists do. In fact, throughout the book there's this sarcastic ha-ha-ha-ha attitude about anybody who believes in religion. It's like, oh, these infantile people. Can you believe how unbelievably immature and foolish? Oh my goodness, these childish people. There's just, in fact, he often mentions again and again and again how he finds it so funny the things that religionists do. Another statement in the book on page 57, "We should reject Deuteronomy as all enlightened moderns do." Now what he's saying is, by definition, all enlightened people have rejected the historical nature of Deuteronomy. Well, he's just said that I'm not an enlightened person. In fact, he's just said that I could list dozens and dozens of people who are considered some of the preeminent thinkers in all human history, that those people are not enlightened. He calls his opponents unworthy. In other words, all believers are unworthy of even having a reasoned discussion. Well, so much for wanting to have a reasonable discussion. He calls the attempts that have been made to test the viability of prayer. In other words, some groups have tried to scientifically, through controlled experiments, try to see whether prayer can, in fact, have an effect on in the physical world. He calls those people pathetic. He calls those who believe in evolution, but also believe in God, members of the Neville Chamberlain School of Evolutionists. And you may not know who Neville Chamberlain is, but he's a very infamous character. He's British, and he was the one who appeased Hitler, and his policy was to do everything he possibly could to appease Hitler to avoid World War II. So basically saying that those who believe in evolution, but also believe that there is a God, basically like a Neville Chamberlain, that they don't have any convictions, that they're just selling out. Now, these statements are sampling just from the first 20% of the book. In fact, the tone of the book actually gets worse as it goes along. Let me just give a couple of other examples of the kind of statements in the book. On page 321, he says that he regrets the doctrine of hell is not true because part of him wishes the nuns he knew when he was growing up would go there. Now, there's a really nice attitude. On page 317, He argues that being influenced by the Catholic Church is more harmful than being sexually abused. Such argument does not deserve the light of day. These kinds of things come up. To summarize, here's how if I were to give a title to this book, I would say the title of this book should have been Why I Hate Religion and All Religious People. Now, what I want to do is I want to go through and talk about why his arguments are so weak. And there's going to be two parts here. First of all, I'm going to show Dawkins' use of logical fallacies. I teach a course on the history and philosophy of science, and one of the major topics we talk about is logical fallacies. In other words, how you can tell that somebody is making illogical arguments, arguments that won't stand the light of reasonable criticism. And it's interesting because what we have the students do in my class is go through and find examples of some of these illogical arguments. And Dawkins' book, on almost every page, is loaded with these sort of completely fallacious lines of reasoning. One example of a logical fallacy is what's known as an ad hominem argument. An ad hominem argument is when you attack the bearer of the message rather than the message that's being borne. In other words, if you have a rather weak argument against your opponent, what you'll do is attack the character of the opponent rather than react to the actual argument of the opponent. And this sort of arguing is used throughout the book. The use of personal attacks. For example, he calls Mother Teresa a sanctimonious hypocrite. Dawkins uses words such as barking mad on page 253, sadomasochistic, page 253, viciously unpleasant, infantile on page 363 to describe Christian belief in God in general. So I guess if you don't have a very decent argument against Christianity, it might be helpful to call them, to generalize and say all Christians are infantile, sadomasochistic, and viciously unpleasant. The problem is that that doesn't really answer the question. He calls, like I said earlier, he calls theistic evolutionists part of the Neville Chamberlain school of evolutionists. This is not the sort of technique used by people who have a solid, convincing argument to make. Another example of a logical fallacy, it's got a kind of a funny name. It's known as the no true Scotsman argument. And it goes something like this. You would say, for example, no true Scotsman would ever wear green plaid rather than red plaid or something like that. And therefore, this person over here who wears green plaid is by definition not a Scotsman. And Dawkins essentially says this, no true scientist would ever believe in the supernatural or in anything that can't be measured by experiment. Now this is circular reasoning because it allows him to declare that anybody who believes in God is by definition not a good scientist. Now by this definition, Copernicus is not a good scientist, neither is Galileo, neither is Newton, Lord Kelvin, Albert Einstein. In fact, virtually every single scientist who developed the scientific method and throughout the time of the scientific revolution is not a good scientist. What kind of argument is that? Another example of logical fallacies that's found again and again throughout the book is begging the question. Begging the question basically means that one assumes the answer to the question as a precondition to asking the question. For example, Dawkins reasons that anyone who believes in a supernatural force is by definition not scientific, and therefore science proves there's no supernatural force. He does this sort of thing again and again throughout the book. Basically, he makes a conclusion, and he uses that conclusion as the basis to arguing for the conclusion that he just made. Another kind of logical fallacy is known as the straw man argument. The straw man argument, basically what it involves is creating a caricature of the person that you're arguing against. In other words, what you do is you create the worst possible imaginable scenario for the kind of person that represents the argument you're going against. And rather than arguing against your actual opponent, you argue against this opponent that doesn't even exist in order to make your position appear better than it is. And again, this is really one of the major features of the book. Basically, Dawkins argues that any religionist is part and parcel with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. He calls Christians Taliban types. he argues that by definition, anybody who is a believer in God is really a believer in violence, in hateful fundamentalism, and that allows him to characterize Christians in a way that's completely out of step with reality, and he doesn't concede a single point. In other words, believe it or not, Dawkins does not concede that Christianity, or any other religion for that matter, has ever given a single positive contribution to human society. So what he's arguing against is not something that actually exists, but he's arguing against a construction and using that as evidence that the thing which doesn't even exist is bad. Now, another thing I talk about in my Science 110 class, my History of Philosophy of Science class, is pseudoscience. In fact, we spent a whole section. And the way I describe it is, by the way, pseudoscience by definition is argumentation that is tried to be supported as if it were scientific, when it in fact is not scientific at all. And when I talk about pseudoscience, I use this analogy. I say, if it walks like a duck, may or may not be a duck. But if it walks like a duck, and looks like a duck, and smells like a duck, and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. In other words, if you see one of these marks of pseudoscience I'm going to give here, that may or may not be solid evidence that the thing is truly not science. But if you see several marks of pseudoscience, and we're going to see there are several of them scattered throughout the God delusion, then you have clear evidence, there's no question about it, we're talking about pseudoscience. Now let me give you a few of the marks of pseudoscience I teach about in my Science 110 class, and show you how these things are found in the God delusion. For example, one mark of pseudoscience is argument by analogy. Now, scientists do use analogy. For example, I just use an analogy in understanding how marks of pseudoscience can be evidence for pseudoscience. I use the duck analogy. But what scientists don't do is support their conclusions by analogy. Basically, an analogy, and when you argue by analogy, what you say is, the thing I'm talking about here is very, very similar to this other thing that's well known and well understood and scientifically supported. Therefore, because my concept is similar to that supported concept, my concept is surely correct. The problem with that is, scientists only reach conclusions because they're in concord with reality. In other words, scientists say that a conclusion is only reasonable if it's supported by scientific experiment. Now, Darwin does this in several ways. He says it's given that Darwinian evolution is a mechanism which creates increased levels of complexity. He argues by analogy that surely there's a complexity-causing mechanism which can explain the fine-tuned universe that we live in. He fails to give a single piece of evidence that there exists. In fact, he doesn't even describe or provide a theory to explain how it might be that the universe itself can spontaneously create its own anthropically tuned laws. Again, he uses another argument by analogy when he says religious belief is like a virus of the mind. This might be a useful polemical argument, but in what sense is religious belief like a virus of the mind? What experiment has he done to show that, in fact, one religious thinker can infect another religious thinker? His ideas about memes, again, are using argument by analogy. Another clear mark of pseudoscience is what I call claims of suppression. In other words, if people are using the fact that they're being persecuted by other people as some sort of indirect evidence that probably what they're saying is true, again, that's evidence of pseudoscience. And it's amazing because in his book, Dawkins claims that the atheist scientists are persecuted. In fact, he literally uses the fact of their persecution as evidence that almost certainly they're correct. Now, the problem with this is simply not true. In fact, it's a bold-faced lie. I know this for a fact. In other words, it may very well be that 200 years ago, 300 years ago, whatever, atheists were persecuted for their beliefs. I definitely agree with that. However, in our present-day context of the scientific culture, it's not atheists that are being persecuted, it's believers. I don't think that Dawkins could produce a single example in the last 50 to 100 years of a scientist who was an atheist who was drummed out of his position for being an atheist. And yet there have been a number of documented cases, clearly documented, of people who were fired, tenured faculty were fired simply because they publicly expressed a belief in God or a belief in religion. In fact, there's this insidious implication that runs through the culture of science that anybody who believes in God is not a good scientist. And it's amazing because studies again and again have shown that religious belief is actually very common among scientists. A recent study in the late 90s, they asked the question of scientists, PhD scientists working in the field, do you believe that there exists a personal God? In other words, a God who's influenced by prayer and by people interacting with him. 40% of the scientists surveyed said they believed in that. 40% that said that they didn't believe it, and 20% said they didn't know. They weren't sure. Interestingly, the culture of science is that those who believe in God have to essentially keep quiet. It's like a don't ask, don't tell sort of thing. And there's just this ha-ha-ha attitude, believe me, expressed in scientific circles towards anybody who actually have the infantile nature or whatever to believe in God. And it's amazing because the believers are kind of kept silent. The fundamentalists in science are those who believe and really try to intimidate those who don't agree with them that there is no God. A third example of Marxist pseudoscience is quoting authors out of context. And Dawkins does this consistently. And I'll have to say this, that young Earth creationists have been guilty of this Marxist pseudoscience again and again and again. In fact, I believe that young Earth creationism is in fact pseudoscience. But nevertheless, Dawkins is guilty of this. Basically, what one does is one argues that because such and such person has said this thing, which seems to be in agreement with your idea, it's essentially evidence. The problem is, when Dawkins does this, he's quoting somebody out of context. For example, he has the nerve to claim that Hitler was a Christian and that it was Christian influence on Hitler that caused him to be able to justify what he did to the Jews and to Europe. He quotes Hitler, who said, "We are convinced that the people need and require this faith." And he's trying to prove that Hitler was a Christian. Now, clearly, this is a very cynical use of Hitler, to say the least. He misquotes the early Christian writer Tertullian. He claims that Tertullian said, "It is by all means to be believed because it is absurd." Now, first of all, Tertullian never even said that. And second of all, he's trying to use this to support the idea that Christians in general believe things simply by the very fact that they're absurd, which I say that is an absurd statement. He also quotes Luther dramatically out of context, many other examples. Another mark of pseudoscience is what I call bogus use of statistics. In other words, scientists use statistics obviously as part of their analysis of their data, but when statistics are used to prove a point that's not proven by the data, that's bogus use of statistics. In other words, if